the start of today's show, make sure you follow A1 in the A10 on Twitter. That is at A1 in the A10. Send us ideas for topics you want to hear on the show. Just shoot us a follow and let us know what you think about the show. That's at A1 in the A10. Episode 4, A1 in the A10, South Point Village coming right back at you. Sean Bednard, your host for today's activities. We'll go counterclockwise once again, as is tradition. Justin Gore to my right side. Justin, how'd the week go for you?
It was a terrible week. Nothing was good.
Only because of today.
Mainly because of today, but other than that, everything was better.
Well, we're talking about last week, technically, so.
That's fair. Nick Peel? Hopefully your Monday has been off to a better start to your week than
this Monday was pretty good, but last Monday we started off a little rough. More details to come.
All right. Matt Feinauer, how are you doing today, man?
Not great. Some things happened with my bike. My ex-girlfriend hates me, and yeah, depressing.
Wow, this is a really inspiring start.
0-3.
So Matt, Courtney, give us a good note to start on.
God, I'm having a great week so far.
There we go.
Today, well, I guess I can't go that far. Today has been about 50-50, which in most cases I'll take that as a win.
Would you say you had your soup and ate it too?
You know,
that's going to be our first topic, I think, for the night. So, some events occurred right before the start of the podcast. And
does everybody hate soup?
Following the occurrence of these events, Matt was very excited and said something. Well, you can't just have your soup and eat it too. Well, you can't have soup and eat it.
You can't eat soup.
More like a slurping motion.
Yeah.
I mean, is it technically eating soup if you eat like let's say there's potato chunks in it? Is that eating soup or is that just?
I mean, that's not really eating the soup. That's eating the contents.
The definition of soup is the
broth
liquid,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or if you powder it up, it's adobo, which is one thing. But
for sure.
I mean, he said he was on the fence between
pancakes
and soup, and I 100% would not have a single problem with saying you can't have your pancakes and eat it too.
I was riding a high.
We got to get you normalized.
Oh, God.
It's a part of the process.
You were excited.
I was.
I've never been a bigger fan of you. I don't think I've ever rooted for you for something for so much in anything. Even when you were on my team in tennis, just
so
never
happy.
Really cared that much.
So this past weekend, CMU won a pretty fun game against UNLV.
Fun fact about the game, for anyone listening, half the Detroit Pistons team was there, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And none of them showed their faces.
Nope. We did indeed almost kind of meet Andre Drummond.
Andre kind of. Up in the booth. Yeah, we saw him.
On ESPN3.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, Andre Drummond, DJ at Wayside, two nights in a row.
Second night was not lit.
I don't think he noticed. I think there was enough people close to him where he's like, oh, it's still just as lit as the other night.
There was 26 and a half people there, honestly.
And a half.
That's a very important marker.
Yeah.
Now, the first night was pretty sick.
Oh, for sure.
With
for
DJ
sure.
Andre Drummond at Wayside. He spun a good
supposed
night.
To be there
he
at
started
12,
off
got
slow.
There at 12,
I feel like he looked nervous. I don't know why. He's got to be used to people watching him all the time, but he got into it as he drank.
Well, it's kind of interesting because you're wondering about it, and you're like, oh, Andre Drummond, Detroit Piston, why is he going to the game? And you're like, okay, maybe he went to school. No, he went to UConn. Maybe
he
had some friends. Nope,
he has
none at CMU.
Here.
The only sort of connection that he has to that game is that he had a friend that went to UNLV, but even that, pretty weak tie.
I think the main tie is just he plays for Detroit, which is in Michigan, where we happen to be.
Did he only come to the game because
of the play?
Yeah. Wow.
But, I mean, it worked out. He was there, and Cooper Rush set a Kelly Short Stadium record for touchdown passes with 6. So, I mean, he was pretty excited about the game. He was tweeting about it plenty of times. He went on air. And
he did it again.
He did it again. The most famous call of all time was a Corey Willis touchdown. He did it again. That guy, he did it again. That was the same play. He did it again. I haven't actually been able to hear the call, but I'm very excited to see if that's exactly how he delivered it, too.
I watched the game, and it was something like that. He took over the broadcast, actually.
Really?
Yeah, on that play when Willis did the cutback and he took to the left half of the end zone. Yeah, he took over that call.
We got to think. As a player, or maybe you're not the best player, maybe you are kind of more of a perennial superstar, like Drummond is with the Detroit Pistons, Is there any point during the time that you're playing, maybe when you're on the bench or maybe near the tail end of your career, when you're like, well, the next step for me, as a lot of people who played and are getting near the end of their playing time are thinking, do I go into the color side, the broadcast side? And, you know, with something like that for Drummond, I mean, it's not exactly the same sport in many regards or any regards at all, but do you think that if it's something like that where he jumped right into it and was ready to do it, that there could be a chance of him doing color for the Pistons in the future?
I don't think so. I think he's more of like a guest star on ESPN type deal.
Okay. I don't think he's very articulate.
I think if he finishes his career as good as he's supposed to be, he'll have plenty of money just off of endorsements and stuff, and then he'll just be a guest star in ESPN and stuff. I don't think he'll ever be a commentator.
That's fair. Now, I'm gonna hold this question where me and Matt can't answer, just on a bit of a bias. But if Finauer, Nick, and Gore, if you guys were players in any professional sport, cricket, would you guys go into broadcasting after your career's over? The only reason I say that me and Matt can't answer this is because we're going into broadcasting anyway, so...
I would say it depends on how much money I made throughout my career, because if I made that much money where I could do whatever I wanted anyway,
yeah,
I don't feel like I would want to waste my time broadcasting. Like, obviously, you'd be able to get into the games, but at the same time, you could just sit courtside or front row if you have that much money anyway.
And enjoy the game and not
and
have
just
to.
Enjoy and just be like a guest speaker.
That's fair.
If you enjoy the spotlight a little bit still.
Is there such thing as like a substitute?
I mean, you guys have watched plenty of Tiger games, I'm sure, this season. Yeah. And they've had plenty of color commentators go through the carousel.
Yeah, I would totally one of those. I wouldn't be a full-time one.
Okay, I respect that.
It's kind of hard. I mean, if you play baseball, you play, I don't know, however many years, 15 years. I mean, that's 160-some-odd games a year, including playoffs. Would you really want to be up in the booth for every single one of those games?
That's
probably
fair.
Not.
Fair
but,
point.
Yeah, maybe a fill-in. I guess it just depends on the sport and how you feel about why you retired in the first place.
Keeping the topic of football mostly, since that's how the tangent of Drummond went off of, kind of a calmer weekend with a little bit of lapse of craziness for college football this weekend. Did you guys see anything that really stood out to you in terms of college football this past weekend?
The Florida State game.
Against Louisville.
That. I guess I thought Louisville would win, but that was... They got demolished.
A 63-20 win, correct? Was that the final?
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
I know they only had 20, Florida State.
Lamar Jackson.
Is he legit?
I think he is.
After that, because that's a good opponent, and he destroyed him.
I don't think he's as much as the hype is, because everyone heard what Michael Vick said, and that he's better than him at Virginia Tech. Five times better than him. But at the same time, the Florida State team isn't as good as their ranking number two, and it's three games into the year. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a quarterback by the name of Teddy Bridgewater who had a spectacular first four games of the season and then just did mediocre the rest of the season. So I think it's a little too early to predict.
He was a Louisville guy, right?
Yes.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
I think it's a little too early to predict that he's the next Michael Vick.
I guess you have to see what happens when defenses start to figure him out later in the season. First couple games are kind of hard to judge off of, but I guess, you know, later in the season, come selection time, we'll see if defenses are able to figure him out. But you know,
do you think he stays?
Great.
No chance.
What year is he? Is this his first year?
Sophomore
year. No chance. Yeah. This is when your draft stock. I mean,
don't you have to play 3 years?
That's
No. You have to be over 21 or over 20. It's. I think it's an age.
No, it's age. You have to be either a junior or a redshirt sophomore. Mm. You have to.
But
stay.
Isn't it an age though?
Mm-mm.
I thought okay.
That I am not aware of.
I don't. If
I
he
haven't
is
heard of him until this past weekend.
Likewise, if he is draft eligible, there's no reason for you to stay behind. Your draft stock is as high as it probably can be, barring an injury that does force him to stay another year. But with all the hype that's around him, I don't see how you don't justify going.
I don't see how, if he does leave, he doesn't go to the Browns, because they won't win a game.
They're going
to
have
first pick.
Five quarterbacks in five games when Cody Kessler starts next Saturday. That's absolutely phenomenal.
It's just a shit show for them.
Getting back to the college football topic,
yes.
I'd like to point out the game that Jabril Peppers had. I think that he's starting to come to his own in the half linebacker, half nickel corner, half safety role that
he
plays. And he finally returned one to the house and actually scored instead of getting tackled at the five. So I think that really shows that he has a chance to. He won't win the Heisman because he would have to do a lot.
He should just be considered.
To be in the race as a defender would be outstanding.
So do you think that Lamar Jackson at this moment is the clear favorite?
He is 90%. Like if they were giving out the Heisman, he would get 90% votes right now.
Okay, that's fair.
Well, what about Cooper Rush, though? I mean, let's just...
He's the dark horse. He is the dark horse.
What do you think he has to do?
I will say, we do have the bias, obviously. Right, because, well, especially for me and Matt, we've seen Cooper play pretty much every year that we've been here, and we've seen him get as much better as he has... much better? Is that proper grammar?
Yeah, sounds good.
He has gotten much better in his time, and right now he is playing as good of a football as any quarterback in the nation. Now, he's not the dual threat type of quarterback that Lamar Jackson is, and like you said, if defenses do start to figure out Lamar, maybe he does get a little bit more passer line, and maybe we'll see his true colors. But Cooper Rush, the only thing that's really against him, and this is, of course, the most expected thing you can think of, he's a Group of Five quarterback. How do you rank his numbers against the teams that he's playing compared to teams like Louisville?
If he wants to be considered in the Heisman race, I think he has to average 5 touchdowns a game.
Okay.
5 throwing touchdowns, because the competition he's going against, like, I've only really watched one game, but when there's a play action and you're throwing deep, it's almost always seems like single coverage. And the corners obviously are not at the talent of, like, a Big Ten school or SEC school. Mm-hmm. And so I would say around 5 touchdowns per
game. I was going to say, like, until the OK State game, I guarantee you he was not on anyone's radar even.
He has been on radars.
Yeah,
it's
NFL
just
draft
because he is one of the most he's the highest passing leader in the NCAA right now. His completion percentage is phenomenal. His touchdown to interception ratio is very good for a 4-year starter. So he's been on radars, but has he been a name that's been known? Absolutely not. And is he still, I mean, at this point, 3 games into the season, 3-0 Chippewa team going to be on CBS for their rivalry game against Western Michigan. Is he going to be on anyone's radar where they're going to say, oh, Cooper Rush, that's a household name? No. I mean, unless CMU runs the gamut, or unless they're looking to get into one of those very premier bowls if they have an excellent season, no, he's not going to be on anyone's radar. And that's going to be the big disadvantage against him. But if he keeps doing what he could do against UNLV, what he could do against Oklahoma State, and what he's going to be able to do against a very poor Virginia team this weekend, I don't know.
That's a stat stuffer game, though. I mean, if there is a game, he needs to put up some big numbers there. But Matt and I were talking about this on the car ride over to the tennis courts this morning, and you know, ranking Central Michigan. Do you think at some point this year will they be ranked?
I think we all agree that if they get undefeated to Western, Western remains undefeated.
Yes.
We beat Western. I think there's like a 75% chance
they
get
ranked.
Because Western's on the cusp of being ranked, too.
Yes. It's the 3 MAC teams that have gotten votes in the AP Top 25. Central Michigan was 16. Western and Toledo both was 6. Now, a lot of people would say Western should already be in the Top 25 because they've beaten 2 Big Ten teams. Now, granted, those are basement-dwelling Big Ten teams, but people are saying, hey, that's a Power 5 win over one of the best conferences in football. So a lot of people are saying, well, there's no reason that Western shouldn't be getting more votes than CMU just because CMU had the one good victory. But it's going to be exciting if, and it's very high opportunity, that both these teams are going to be undefeated, and I think the nation is starting to realize that since it is going to be on CBS and it's going to be a nighttime rivalry game. People are starting to realize that, hey, this could be the game that, well, very much so decides the MAC and decides which one of these teams is going to make their way into the top 25. Now, last time that CMU was ranked in the top 25, they were number 23, and that was in 2008, 2009, when they had their best quarterback ever, who Cooper is trying to surpass right now. One of the things that I wanted to bring up, and that's one of the reasons that I really do talk about the college football weekend, this is something that a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on, and it's in regards to the North Dakota State Bison. I don't know if you saw the game or saw the results of the game. They beat the number 13 Iowa Hawkeyes on the road 23-21. North Dakota State, one of the greatest teams in FCS history. I mean, in terms of players that have been drafted, 5 straight national championships. This North Dakota State is real. Or North Dakota State team. If you look at AP Top 25 polls, because they released what every AP Top 25 voter voted for as their top 25, North Dakota State got as high as 12 on quite a few radars. because they're saying this is a legitimate victory. There's no reason for this North Dakota State team not to be ranked when they're able to beat the crap out of FBS teams. I mean, the stat has been going around in the last 2 years. There have been more FBS wins from North Dakota State than there has been from Kansas. Now, that's easy to pick on the little brother. But let's say this. Let's say North Dakota State gets an offer to move up to FBS D1 in some crazy hypothetical world. Should they accept it?
No.
Would you rather have an incredible FCS team who's kicking the crap out of everybody they play, has legitimacy to beat up on the big brother FBS teams, or would you rather have a middle ground FBS team?
If they switch to FBS, they will not be good because everyone goes there because they're not quite as good as everyone else that goes to the Power 5 schools, but they want to win. They want to be part of a winning team. They want to win a national championship, so they go to North Dakota State. If they go to FBS, they're not going to get the same players because why would they go to an FBS school that's very small and in North Dakota?
Yeah, they got a good thing going. Yeah, I wouldn't mess it up.
All right, so imagine that you are the athletic director, you're president of the university. What conference offers them, and at what point do you actually forget all the intangibles, like no one wants to go to North Dakota State, things like that, and say, all right, you know what, we're going to do it, we're going to join?
They're in a weird location.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, other than like Dakota, the MAC around
I think
here.
It might be Mountain West if they went.
Yeah.
Yeah. MAC has been thrown around before, but that is a very harsh travel
Big
schedule.
Big Ten right there, too. Again, that's really hard. You got to go out to New Jersey. You got to Pennsylvania. Yeah, something on the West Coast would probably be the easiest.
Yeah, I think Mountain West would be good for them. But at the same time, it's like what Nick said, why would you mess up something that's going well for the team, for your school? If North Dakota State was in the Mountain West or whatever conference they were in, no one would ever talk about them. Mm-hmm. Because even if they won their conference every once in a while, they wouldn't win national championships.
It's like an Air Force. Like, Air Force, like, destroys every single year, but nobody talks about them because, you know, they're in the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're an FCS team, they would do, you know, just as much as North Dakota State is doing, in my opinion.
See, I would equate it to Grand Valley.
I was actually going to bring it up.
You know, Grand Valley for years, especially under Brian Kelly, they had a great thing going for them. They ended up winning the Division II National Championship.
I think they won it last year as well.
And they're a legitimate Division II team that has been thrown around to join the MAC, but they refused to jump up to Division I because Division I athletics cost a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to maintain your facilities so much. And, you know, the school itself just doesn't want to do that because they don't want to be a sports revenue
mm-hmm.
School. So I think
recruiting's different, too.
Recruiting
yes.
is,
yeah.
is very different.
Whole different animal.
Do you want to go to a top Division II school or a bottom Division I school?
It's a tough say because CMU's only national championship came when they were a D2 team. And now they're – I mean, people consider them a very good MAC team, but what is that worth besides being a very good MAC team? You might make the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, or you'll go to the Quick Lane Bowl, and that's nice. It's cool. It's good to see your team on national TV. But what does it matter? Because if you're out of that Power 5 group, you're irrelevant. So when you see a team like North Dakota State, who's kind of more in that little brother FCS territory, and they're going and it doesn't matter who they play, they're going to kick the crap out of them, I don't see any reason why you would move up.
See, I mean, you can't necessarily say that, you know, they don't matter because although they are few and far between, you know, you had Boise State 4 or 5 years ago, you've got Houston
right.
now. You know, if you legitimize yourself, which as much as I hate to say it, I think of anybody around the area, I think Western
yes.
Michigan's done the best job
far
doing
away.
That. I respect PJ Fleck. I think he's done a great job. I don't necessarily.
I respect
know,
him, but I hate him.
Absolutely. That's the exact feelings that I have towards him because he's the head coach of my rival school.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, if he was coaching for, I don't know, SMU or something like that,
yeah.
I would be on board. Just some random school who I have no affiliation with.
Mm-hmm. Row the boat.
You know, but it's. You can't necessarily say that they don't matter because it does happen.
Right,
so,
right.
you know, you don't want to count them out too quickly.
Of course.
And, hey, you never know what Coach Bonamigo, you know, he's brought life back to Mount Pleasant
yes.
and to CMU football that hasn't been here since Dan Lefevre. And even with Lefevre, you know, we had Brian Kelly. There was, you know, there, I don't think there was as much of a homegrown feel as there is now.
It's just, it's that power of having an alumni back in control. And it's someone who's completely bought into the program. And we were talking about it earlier before we went to play tennis. I read that tweet to you where they said, group of five coaches to watch out for who will make the jump to Power Five in the next few years. And number five was John Bonamigo, coach of CMU. There's no reason. He left an NFL job, be it special teams and be it for the Lions, but he left an NFL job because he said, the only school that I ever want to coach at is being back at Central Michigan. Now, another thing that I wanted to bring up with this North Dakota State topic, getting gear switched back in that position, if you're going to schedule an FCS team, if you're going to schedule a team that you're playing more so to get your players more developed for when conference play comes around, why on earth, as Iowa, do you pick the most dominant perennial powerhouse team at that level? If you win, you beat an FCS team, regardless of five national championships, regardless of the ranking behind them, regardless of how fantastic they are as a team, you beat an FCS school. If you lose, you're a top 25 team that just got beat at home by a team not even in your level of football.
See, a lot of people, you know, my dad is an Iowa grad. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of family in Iowa. A lot of people in and around the area are very upset that they scheduled North Dakota State when you've got Northern Iowa right there in Iowa. Now, typically they do play UNI. Mm-hmm. You know, they're an FCS school who is another perennial powerhouse who generally is in the top five FCS. However, for whatever reason, this year they decided to schedule North Dakota State instead, paid them, you know, over $500,000. And subsequently lost.
Yes. And as a ranked team against an FCS school, that's you can't do that. I mean, just ask Michigan against former FCS Appalachian State.
Iowa is the definition of a wannabe Power 5 conference, like a leader, like someone you think about. Because Iowa every year seems like they're ranked, at least recently, they're ranked. But at the end of the year, when it comes to the rankings for now, the playoff, but they are never in that conversation. But just for bowl games, it's who did they play? Like that's always a thing in the Big Ten where it's they're not the SEC, so their conference they say isn't the best. They obviously have a good top four, for sure, one of the best. But it's the bottom that's so weak. And they talk about Iowa, who I believe it was last year, didn't play either, I think it was Michigan State and Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And it was like, who did they play during the year? Who did they beat?
Right. Because, I mean, there's a lot of very ugly parts of the Big Ten. I mean, just that whole Eastern
Their one
division.
Legitimate win was against Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they played Michigan State tough.
Yeah.
I mean, that Big Ten championship
game Iowa to win.
Was one of the greatest football games I've ever watched.
Very exciting.
You know, and obviously, my little brother listens to this. He's going to be ticked off. And I'm sure he'll bring it up to my dad, who'll go on some sort of rampage about how great Iowa is, because I hear it every single time. But I agree. I agree with you, Gore. I think Iowa is it's like that fun uncle who you see and you want to root for no matter what he's doing.
But then he spills beer all over the cake and you can't eat the cake anymore.
Right.
The party's
ruined.
Did this happen to you, Sean? No, I can't speak from experience on that, unfortunately.
I
have had an uncle who spilled beer on an ice or air hockey table. And let me tell you, air hockey's never quite the same when you got beer spilled on it once.
Oh, I'm sure. But it's really tough because they're a team that's different than most in that they run a very pro style system. You know, they're very trench heavy and you don't typically see a lot of stud skill players come out of Iowa. There are a bunch of guys who grow up in cornfields and sling pigs around because that's all there is to do in Iowa.
Can you speak from experience on throwing pigs? Okay.
I was gonna go along with that. I think that Iowa's style of play is successful in the Big Ten because of the way they play. It's defense, don't turn the ball over. But, for example, how you said that they played Michigan State very well and they lost. Well, how about the bowl game when they played Stanford? And it was an embarrassment because they got absolutely destroyed because Stanford plays the same style better.
Right. Well, because you can get better talent to Stanford than you can to Iowa.
I know, but I'm saying that's what everyone says about Iowa. It's that they schedule the teams that they know they can beat.
Well, that didn't work out this year for
them. Not quite. Going off of that once again, as it is, teams like Iowa and other Power Fives are playing schools where they just have to write a blank check. That's understandable. Nature of the football beast now. You know, you're going to have to pay to have those cupcake teams, quote, come to your town. But your team is supposed to win these games. However, for example, as I brought up earlier, Northwestern and Illinois combined for over $1.2 million to have Western beat them up. And NDSU, I'm sure, got paid plenty of money, like you said, to go to Iowa and have one of their biggest wins in school history, at least biggest FBS win in school history. So what is the value of your dollar when it comes to finding Group of Five or FCS opponents? Where do you find value with true quality of opponent without that chance of the upset?
Well, I think, you know, especially with the implementation of the college football playoff, I think that's why Iowa scheduled North Dakota State. Because, you know, they're a more respectful FCS team as opposed to beating Alabama State.
Fair.
You know, if you go and you beat North Dakota State, you know, they had College Game Day a couple years ago.
Yep.
They're a legitimate school and a program that people around the football world respect. You know, so when you take that in hand, you have to schedule the better FCS schools, mm-hmm. Group of Five schools. So at the end of the year, when the college football playoff committee is looking at you, you're undefeated. You say, hey, well, you know, this win stacks up a little bit better than this one, mm-hmm. so we got to give it to them instead. So it's tough, but mm-hmm. it's kind of what you have to do. Also, I work there.
Oh, Orlando. Yay. That's a place.
Shout out to Orlando.
Just throwing a quick stat that I got here.
Yeah.
Iowa paid North Dakota State $500,000.
That's what I thought. I had written that down as $500,000, but I wasn't sure if it was more or less.
They also beat Iowa State in 2014 for $350,000, beat Kansas State in 2013 for $350,000, beat Colorado State for $250,000, beat Minnesota for $350,000, and beat Kansas for $375,000.
So just dishing out. I mean, it's not a bad day at the office. You get on a plane, you fly down to Iowa, you show up, play football, win, beat a ranked team, collect your paycheck, go back to North Dakota. I mean, maybe the last part, depending on if we're talking to Matt Finehour or not, could be a touchy subject. But, you know, you don't have exactly the biggest love for North Dakota over there, Finehour, if we're looking back at episode two.
Well, what would the name be? If North Dakota and South Dakota.
Just Dakota.
Hypothetically, but what would North Dakota State's football team be called?
Dakota State?
Sure.
I think it's easy enough.
I retract all my negative comments toward North Dakota.
This is progress. This is what we've been meaning to get to.
Progress.
Just real quick, because I think it's been a long time coming, and looking at our numbers over the course of the last couple of weeks, I think a well-deserved shout-out has to go out to the fine people down in Wichita, Kansas. Our second biggest following outside of Michigan is right down there in Wichita, Kansas. Shock the world, baby.
Which I want to visit Wichita and meet all our fans.
I think we got to go on tour.
I actually have a funny little story about that.
I almost went to Wichita.
So I had a sociology teacher at my previous school, Mr. Papadakis.
Wow.
And
cool name.
It was like one of the teachers that the sports team would schedule. And so it was full of sports players. And the teacher would always say, oh, you guys know Wichita State, the Shockers, but you never heard of them before. Every class, like, you would swear this guy had no idea that he said it every class period. But every single class, I kid you not, he would talk about the Wichita State Shockers.
Shock the world, baby. Yep. I mean, they're always fun to watch as a fan of college basketball. I mean, you see a game where it's like, blah, blah, blah versus Wichita State, and you're like, okay, this is going to be a fun one to watch.
And when they went on their run in the NCAA tournament,
man,
I think it's different with basketball, like FCS teams, FBS teams, you know, in football. But in basketball, I think it's, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it's more even as far as basketball is concerned.
It seems like because there is no FCS for basketball per se.
You're right.
Since Division One is so massive, you're going to have a chance for plenty of Cinderellas because everyone's at the quote-unquote same level. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's why you can have those mid-major teams, as they are called in college basketball. That's why you can have those emergers, and that's why a lot of people who are fans of the mid-majors, they call it mid-major madness instead of March madness because you don't know what's going to happen with those Cinderella teams. It was Cornell versus Duke, 15-2, a couple of years back that I remember very vividly. And I don't know. College basketball is a very fun – it's a whole different environment from really any sport, especially when it
Quick
comes to postseason
segment.
Time.
Do you guys think anytime soon that someone gets a perfect bracket? There was one close person last year. I think they got to maybe the Final Four. Maybe. I'm not sure. But do you think anytime soon?
Ooh. I don't know. My closest year is when I put Michigan in the finals like I do every year, and they got to the finals.
I'll say within the next 3 years.
I had Louisville in the finals, too.
I can't see anybody winning.
It's tough. I mean, if you do, you're set for the rest of your life. Because, I mean, what, Warren Buffett put like $1 million or $1 billion on it?
I think he rescinded that, actually.
That's fair. I mean, I
can't
blame him.
I think the first year was $1 billion, though.
That's crazy. And, like, you can just, like, throw that around, like, yeah, I'll give you $1 million. Just get a perfect bracket.
It's like, I mean, I think it was $1 billion.
Yeah, it was $1 billion.
It's a mathematical anomaly, of course.
Right. And, I mean, if Warren Buffett just wanted to shell out $1 million, he could do it, and it wouldn't affect him literally any way.
But a billion.
A billion. I think a billion does a little bit of damage no matter who you are.
That's fair. So switching gears a little bit from college basketball and college football and going around into different topics. Matt, you had one coming into it. What were you thinking?
Yeah, so my topic, anyone who's listening, me and my buddy Matt Courtney here I guess we're still technically recently single.
Yeah, I'd still call us recently single.
What is your guys'
what a topic.
Idea of a good or even must I say perfect first date, and what do you want out of a first date with a girl? Like I'm talking about date like you actually want a relationship, not what
Right.
Not what most people at
you don't
CMU
you don't
want.
Bring her back to our apartment in here, that's for sure.
Wow.
We are a laugh riot. I would take anyone here. Can't handle
fair.
You guys, I could never date them anyway.
I think on a first date, I mean, speaking from experience of, like, one first date.
Have you been on dates?
I thought you guys were just together.
You guys just morph? That's how it works.
I would want something, like, simple, so to say. Because, like, if I'm trying to have an extended relationship, I wouldn't want anything that would happen too fast.
Yeah.
That something could happen, and I would embarrass myself, and she would never like me again, that type of scenario. Because
okay.
I feel like I'm a very embarrassing person.
That's fair. I feel in the same way. I don't know. It's weird that he brings this up because I kind of always had like one kind of weird idea of like the perfect quote-unquote first date. And it's always kind of played out like this for me. Pick her up about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and we go ice skating. Like in downtown Detroit when they have like the open skate and like the open air on outside. We do that. Have a fun time. You know, you're going to be doing that. And we go out for Italian food, nice Italian restaurant, something like that. And, I mean, I don't know. If I'm looking for something serious, I probably won't try a kiss on the first date. But, I don't know. That's always been the idea of what I thought of the perfect first date for me, at least.
You can't ice skate.
You can't.
Nope.
I'm at it. I can skate. That's don't ask me to do more.
I've ice skated like twice in my entire life.
I've never been on skates, ever. I've
never
even
roller?
Either. Never.
Nope, never rollerblade.
Wow.
Okay, so to keep on topic.
Yeah, I mean,
all right, let's hear yours, Nick.
Yes.
My perfect idea? Well, this is actually a good idea with bringing them back here because we are a riot. I mean, you gotta meet the family.
Such
you gotta
a
meet
terrible
the,
idea.
The
so what are you
A1
going into?
Yeah, I don't know. I think guys like it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think simplicity is probably the best as far as guys go. I don't know. There's a lot to do around campus here, so you could... Tennis.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
You could tennis.
Yeah. You could tennis. Girl, you want a tennis?
Feinauer and I were
all the balls.
Feinauer and I were playing tennis this afternoon, and there was a guy and a girl playing, and they had absolutely no idea what they were doing. They actually told me that coming in. They walked into the courts, and I said, "Hey, fellow tennis players."
And, just like that?
True story.
Perfect.
And they looked at me, and they laughed, and they said, "We have no idea what we're doing." And then the guy looks at me and says, "Yeah, I've never played tennis before." Perfect. So, yeah. You know, who knows? That could have been something.
Yeah. Maybe it was the start of something new, as some song I'm sure said once.
Start of something new.
See, I knew I could rely on Nick for that.
Oh,
I... You couldn't. Okay, wait. Hold on.
No.
Nick never did say what his was.
No, hold on. Just going off of that, Nick does have a slight bias to the whole high school music.
Yes.
Does he?
Woo! Coach?
Yes.
Relive some glory days?
Oh, man. I have a clipboard in my car, and every time I look at it, it reminds me of me
snapping it. None other than junior year High School Musical put on by Bay City Western,
wow.
Coach Bolton.
No way!
Yes, this is true.
That's where the spiky hair came from, if I'm not mistaken.
I had to put it up, yeah.
Is there a video of this?
Oh, God.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Probably somewhere, yeah. Also, High School Musical, though, that is when Ashley Van Octen, fan of the show, fell in love with me officially.
Can we put that on the record?
Put it on the record. I will.
What will her boyfriend say about that?
I don't know.
All right, so Nick, what's your ideal first date?
I just told you. I play
Bring
tennis.
Her here? Oh, play
because
tennis.
Because I coach tennis, I could take it fundamentally. We could take it
slow,
you know, from the ground up. Yeah,
slow
from the ground
this
up.
This is how you swing.
I would play tennis. Yeah,
okay.
I would play tennis.
Here's kind of the same thing. So. The best relationships the best relationship I've ever been in is one where I didn't want to have a first date. I didn't want to date anybody.
Okay.
And it just happens. Like, I think if you actually, like, try to find someone, they go, like, I want to date them, it does not
That's
go
fair.
As well as you want it to. Because, like, when I met Emily, my ex-girlfriend, like, in my head, I was like, I'm not dating again for, like, half a year. And then I ended up dating her, even though I really did not plan it. Like, we tried breaking up with each other for the first, like, 4 months, like, back and forth.
Okay.
Like, it was just stuff like that, because neither of us wanted to date each other, and then we just ended up having probably the best relationship I've ever been in, so.
So, in terms of perfect first date, since you didn't really touch on that at all during that, what is the perfect first date?
The perfect first date is the one where she does most of the talking. What we do.
Sounds like every...
We bring her on A1 and the A10.
So, like, 75% of girls would work for me because they talk a lot. I don't like being the one relied on to do all the talking.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Matt, did you say...
I don't think you did.
Did you say yours?
Perfect first date. Matt Courtney.
Disney World.
Wow.
That's a first date?
I assume bias.
Yeah, bold.
Palm party foul.
She's really going to agree to go to Disney World with you on the first date.
Yep. That's,
let's just fly down. What do you mean, agree?
We're going.
Pick you up at 6.
Be ready.
The one thing I would say on relationships going off fine hours topic here, I would say for a relationship to work, it can't so much be as a sexual relationship as most start out to be. I mean, obviously when you're young, sometimes it doesn't if you last a long time. But I think it's got to be more of a like a best friend type scenario that you don't get sick of them when you see them a lot because you're going to end up seeing them every day almost. I think Feinauer was quoted in his last relationship saying that, "I think I love her because we don't have sex and I still want to see her."
Well, that's a great way. And, you know,
do
actually
you
taking up...
and now I'm sad.
You know, just going off of your relationship in general, Gore, you know, you don't get to see your girlfriend very often. But, you know, me, Sean, and Feinauer recently being in relationships where we could see our partners... Mm-hmm. Every single day, how much is too much?
Ooh, now that's a good question.
At
I
what
think
point
it,
do you
half
make
the
week
disconnect? Is too much?
Oh, no, it depends on the people. Me and Emily went multiple weeks where we'd see each other, like maybe not for a long period of time, but I'd see her every day.
Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Yeah.
How long was it every day?
Like, it ranged from anywhere. I would spend the night half the time.
Okay.
I would after class, we'd always go out to eat or something and then hang out after at one of our houses or just go out to see a movie or something. I don't know. Like, I don't know. With us, it was we definitely like seeing each other as much as possible.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of why it's not working now to where I left and we can't see each other every day, and that was a big problem. So.
Well, for me, well, at least when I was in school at Chicago, I saw my girlfriend literally every day, but there was days where I would be hanging out with her, and she would just get there, and it'd be like an hour later, and one of my teammates or one of my friends would say, like, hey, let's go do this, something that she could come along for, and she would understand that I would go, and she would just go home, because you can't just take your girlfriend or boyfriend, not assuming.
Of course. Good, like, of course.
I was hoping you weren't.
We don't assume on A1 of the A-Ted.
Not assuming gender or anything here, but you can't just take someone away from their friends because eventually you need a friend besides your soulmate.
It's true. And you know what? Back when I was dating Emily, I think our girlfriends understood that when you came home from Chicago, we were going to hang out,
yeah.
Whether they wanted us to or not.
Kind of switching things up here, something that I've realized. A favorite actor doesn't have to be someone who you like in every movie, but an actor that fits that show, your favorite show, something that you would watch every day over and over, is someone that plays their role to a T where you think that they are real life, that is something that happens in the real world.
Oh,
for me, yeah. Kiefer Sutherland in the show 24.
Yeah.
Oh, he's perfect
for
that. He
fits that show so well. And I was just wanted to go around the room here, starting to my left with Sean.
Okay.
Because I feel like he...
So could you restate the question?
Topic, favorite show and actor?
Favorite actor that fits a part?
Favorite actor that fits a part.
Can I interject really, really quick and say Feinauer has the worst opinions on actors and movies? In the
cosign! 100% cosign. Humongous cosign.
Topic. Okay. Sean, go ahead here.
Okay. Okay, let me think.
So, best actor that fits his role.
That fits his role.
Got it. Okay. Does it have to be a TV show?
No.
Okay. Liev Schreiber in Goon. You've seen Goon before.
Yes.
He played Ross the Boss. He was absolutely perfect as that role. He had that low, gravelly voice, that kind of look where you just didn't want to mess with that guy. But at the same time, he was so smug, so pompous, you couldn't help but root for him. I think Liev Schreiber in Goon was absolutely the perfect fit, the perfect role.
I could agree to that. Mine is Ashton Kutcher as Kelso.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a...
I think undeniably, I couldn't imagine anybody else other than Ashton Kutcher pulling that off. And no matter what he does anymore, I will always see him as Kelso. And I'm not one who has seen That 70s Show all the way through. I've never
you
once considered myself a diehard fan. I just know he's that perfect for that role.
Absolutely right.
Kelso Burn.
Burn!
All right, Matt. Here we go.
This is a generally new show that I doubt any of you guys have watched. Or I know you've seen because it's been out at my house before, but I doubt you watch extensively. It's a comedy, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Andy Samberg as Jake Peralta.
Okay.
I have seen an episode.
He's the character is supposed to be a goofy cop who, like, is good, but his methods are ridiculous, and Andy Samberg's ridiculous in everything he does.
Yeah. I haven't seen this show extensively enough.
It is
enough,
a great show.
I haven't. All I know from Andy Samberg is, from that description, 100% would see that working.
And plus, supporting cast Terry Crews.
Why have I not seen the show?
Grand Rapids.
It's a great show.
Western Michigan grad, though.
We'll let him slide.
Yeah, but he's Terry
Old Spice
Crews.
Man. Come on, guys.
He can flex his pecs. That's true.
He can do a lot with his body.
This is true.
Nick, who's the perfect fit, the perfect role for the perfect show?
Oh, Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad.
Okay. I can see that. I could see that. I could not picture another Walter White.
And now when I see Bryan Cranston anywhere, I picture Walter White.
One of my favorite things about Bryan Cranston is the newest Godzilla movie that came out, marketed it as Godzilla with Bryan Cranston.
And he was hardly in it.
He died 15 minutes into the movie.
That's so...
Spoiler alert for a movie that came out 2 years ago. But...
It's kind of funny, because it's weird how movies will do that and how, like, Hollywood will do that, because looking back, freshman year of high school, I was hanging out with a few of my friends. Shout out to Combat Waffle. And we had this idea for a movie called Hans Wailington, starring Will Smith. It was just called Hans Wailington.
Oh, I've heard this.
So Hans Wailington is a story about Will Smith being named Hans Wailington. He goes to a whale school under the ocean, but he's able to breathe somehow. So you get all the buildup. You're like, oh, Will Smith in their movie. It's going to be fantastic. It's something about whales. It could be offbeat, kind of funny, kind of cool. Will Smith dies within the first 5 minutes, but the idea of the movie is to find somebody who becomes Hans Wailington, because it's a title and not an actual person. It was lame, stupid, but kind of awesome. Gore kind of leaves the room at the moment that we anticipate his...
I kind of wanted to extend off Gore's topic, by the way. So, I agree Kelso was the perfect... Kelso. Ashton Kutcher's the perfect role for Kelso, but I feel like roles like that kind of doom a lot of actors' careers, because you see him as, because like when he tries to do serious movies, you don't take him perfectly serious. You see him as Kelso still.
Well, no, absolutely, and I think that's the roadblock that somebody like Daniel Radcliffe is running into.
Oh, for sure. Very hard.
I mean, he's never not going to be Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You know, I think you got to respect Emma Watson.
She's branched out. She's gotten away from Hermione.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a lot easier as a female, though.
Yeah, actually,
I'm trying to think of an example where it'd be otherwise, but
like Jennifer Lawrence and everything. Like you'd say, like the Hunger Games.
She's in everything.
I still wouldn't say that though, because I can't think of the name of the movie where
the Hunger Games.
No.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence says she's in the movie. Where she is like a druggie.
A mob salesman?
Oh. American Hustle?
No. Wow, she's in a lot of movies.
Yeah, she is. She's very talented. Man.
Well, it's also, I think, easier for some males, too. Because, you know, like Will Ferrell. If you're a comedy guy.
That's comedy different. Is different, I think. But I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I was going to say Will Smith. I mean, granted, he plays Will Smith in every movie. Right. But he's able to portray a different version of Will Smith in every Will Smith movie.
I would say for a female, it's easier because guys, obviously, for movies, they wear makeup and things like that. But you always look the same. Like, females can change their face, change their hair, change their body for a sense of losing weight or gaining weight, that they would look different and portray a different character. But, for example, like Daniel Radcliffe, he will always look like Harry Potter. Unless he gets...
Contacts.
I don't even know.
Just something different.
He's got to look different because he looks just like Harry Potter.
What about... this is kind of out of left field. Topher Grace, also from That 70s Show. I mean, at least for me, I've seen every episode of That 70s Show, and unproudly, I admit, twice I've seen every episode. So I've seen all 200 episodes twice. But every time that I see him in a movie, and he has started to pick up a few more movie roles. He was in Interstellar playing the daughter's boyfriend, or quote-unquote boyfriend. But every time I see him, I'm like, that's Eric Foreman. That's all that it is. And it's crazy that... You commit to a role, and you're like, this is going to be my stepping stone. But more than anything, it becomes a concrete block around your legs that prevents you from being able to move on past that role. And I think Daniel Radcliffe is the perfect example. Is there anyone else who's really kind of along those same lines?
I think there's plenty of people. If we sat down and thought about it for a while.
I mean, Drake Bell.
That's fair.
Drake and Josh will always be Drake and Josh.
Josh Peck's doing a good job of...
He's become... Yeah, he's a Vine star. I mean, that's...
He was in the new Red Dawn, which
was atrocious.
Drake Bell looks exactly the same. Josh Peck has actually lost weight.
Yeah, he did.
So he's changed.
He also
his
has
appearance.
That show, Josh Peck...
Grandfather with Rob Lowe.
No, John Stamos. Rob Lowe's John the Grinder.
I confuse those
same
a lot.
People, Rob Lowe, John...
Nick
no.
gets it.
To add on to another actor that I wanted to say, since it came all the way back around to me... in Home Improvement and Last Man Standing,
Tim Allen
is the perfect character for what you would say is a man. Like, when you describe a man to someone, you would say everyone that Tim Allen is in that show, everything he does.
Do you watch Last Man Standing?
Yes, I do.
It's a very good show.
It's a very good show.
I just want to give a quick appreciation to him, too. He has done a phenomenal job as the voice of the Pure Michigan ads. Like, he has that perfect amount where it just, boom, it gets you. Like, you're like, go back to the falls of Michigan. You're like, I will. I do. I am going to right now. I will do that.
And who can forget that he's Buzz Lightyear?
It's important, too. That's very definitely important. Not something you want to forget about.
I like him. Yeah. And I, Home Improvement, I'd watch it on Nick at Night, I believe.
Yeah.
He'd have it on right after George Lopez show.
Oh, man, George.
That's a powerful lineup right there.
I have heard is going to get a reboot, and I would be pretty excited.
No. I was about to ask a stupid question. I was going to say, is George Lopez going to be in it?
I would hope so.
It's his name. Nick, earlier this week you said, when you got home, you said, Sean, I've got a great story for A1 and the A10, and I'm not going to tell you until the podcast comes around. I've been waiting, and I'm ready to hear it.
I wanted I wanted a good reaction out of you, so I didn't tell you. Last Monday, as you know, I commute back and forth for the most part.
Oh, I know it.
To different jobs and whatnot back home. And as I was about halfway home, about 30 minutes into my drive back to Auburn, I reached down to my pockets. I don't have my wallet on me.
Ooh.
I've never lost my wallet in my life. All right, I've never kept
it
out of sight.
Don't do it.
I 100% do not recommend it.
So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, what's going on here? Did I put it in my backpack? Which I usually do. I usually put it in my backpack. Stopped at a gas station along 20. Checked every part of my car. Not underneath my seat. Not in my other pocket. I checked in my other pocket first, which
that's a good thing
wasn't
to do.
There.
Did you check your hat? Were you wearing a hat?
I was not wearing a hat.
So did you check it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But did you chickity check yourself?
Chickity check.
Is this two straight weeks you've done that?
Or you wreck yourself?
Anyway, you know, I checked my backpack. Nothing there. I checked my back seat. Absolutely nothing there. Checked my trunk. I have two huge bags of tennis balls, and they're probably 100 tennis balls. I went through those bags, no wallet. So I'm thinking, great. I don't even know what to do in this situation. So I said, I just got out of class. Maybe the lecture hall is empty. So I drive the 30 minutes back to Mount Pleasant.
Oh,
question.
And, yes.
Why didn't you just ask one of us?
Because I wanted to see if I just dropped it.
He wanted the humble reaction for the podcast.
Right.
Going on.
My entire day was based around hopefully recording this for a podcast.
Honestly, isn't that all that our days are?
Yep.
Yeah. And so I drive the 30 minutes back. I get to I think I was in Pierce Hall. Yeah, I was in Pierce Hall. I walk in. What do you know? There's a class in there. So I check. They're not done for another 2 hours.
Ooh.
So I said, I'm going home. I'm just gonna drive. So I go home, text my dad. I'm like, hey, my wallet's gone. He goes, okay, just make sure to cancel your debit card. I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. Checking my bank statements, nothing. We're all good. Okay, so cool. I said, I'll wait till the next day. I'll go to Chemical Bank. Everything will be good. So in the meantime, contact CMU police. They're like, yeah, we'll look out for it. Contact Pierce Hall. Yeah, we'll look out for it. Nothing. So the next day, it was Tuesday, came back here, drove back up here again. Let's say I was about to go cancel my debit card when I see a transaction on my bank statements for $15. Not bad. You know, I could cover it. Wasn't too bad. Until I see what it was for. Does anybody want to take a wild guess what somebody spent $15 of my money on?
Is that about what a butt plug would cost?
I call a guy to find out.
I don't know.
Was it a butt plug?
It was not a butt plug.
All right, so 0-1.
Condoms.
It was not condoms.
Was it sexual in any way?
You got to keep guessing. Everybody gets one guess.
Everybody gets one. Tell him, Peter.
Everybody gets one.
Apparently everyone gets one.
Sean, what do you think they spent $15 of my own money?
$15. You know what? If I were in that position where for some reason I stole somebody's debit card, I would absolutely get food first. So I'm going to say $15 worth of food.
Garbage. It was not food.
You're a piece of shit, Sean.
I've never stolen a wallet. And I have no intent to.
You returned.
But has he stolen a credit card?
You know, just because of the people who would probably steal a wallet, They probably spent it on, like, cigarettes and lottery tickets.
Not cigarettes and lottery tickets. Do you want to know
Cigarellos?
What they...
Cigarellos?
No. Oh, nothing smokable.
Switcher Sweets? Oh,
nothing smokable.
Man.
Do you want to know
yes.
what oh, somebody God. Spent $15 of my own money on?
Find out in next week's episode of A1 and the A10.
It was done at 2 a.m.
Okay.
They spent $15 on stamps.
Oh boy, I'm gonna mail so many packages now.
No.
I'm not kidding. I checked it. I called my mom. I said the person who has my wallet spent $15 worth of stamps. And my mom said they must have really needed to mail a package.
So, oh, thank God, I finally found somebody's a debit card. Now I can mail all those letters to Santa that I've been meaning to. The Christmas is saved.
So I go to Chemical Bank, and this was about 15, 20 minutes before I was going to go and cancel it. And so I go to the teller.
Let him have it.
And I tell the lady at the teller, at the counter, I told her everything that happened, and she said, do you know what the last purchase on your statement was just for our records? And I said, yes, I do know what it was for. She said, so what was it? I said, it was stamps. And I don't think she believed me, really. I don't
think
she
did. Okay, sir, what was it really?
And she said, did you spend anything else? I said, I didn't buy the stamps. Like, and at that point,
this
I said,
ridiculous.
Can you just cancel it? She goes, yeah, sure, that's no problem. I didn't have any ID on me or anything, so she must have thought I was... you know, crazy or something. I don't know.
Well, you don't have your ID because your wallet was stolen. Right. Doesn't she understand that?
And so, you know, I drove home again Wednesday.
So you're doing all of this without a license.
I was going to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're lucky. I mean, granted, I don't doubt your abilities as a driver, especially having to commute as much as you do.
I'm
but
a driver.
That is some risky business.
It was risky, and I was aware of the consequences going into it. I do have my wallet back.
Thank
but
goodness.
Wait, did you find it, or what happened?
Oh,
here we go. Here's
oh.
the climax.
I'm coming to that. It's not as good as the stamps part, but it's.
I
guess
don't
it's
think anything
good.
Would be.
So, and I drive home on Wednesday, and I let my mom take me to the Secretary of State. I drive 45 minutes. I let my mom take me 10 minutes to the Secretary of State. I know.
Yeah, but your mom makes good cookies.
Oh,
yes,
she does.
She does. So, get to the Secretary of State. You know, everything, I bring all my documents I need, birth certificate, whatever. Everything gets set up, get my picture retaken, sign the documents, everything. My mom and I are leaving, and I look at her and I said, do you have my birth certificate and all my paperwork? She said, no, I thought you did. I'm like, ugh, two for two, I lose stuff, all right? So I go back in, the lady at the counter has my birth certificate. Everything with, like, my social security number on it. So I could have, you know, been in even deeper water than I already was. So, no big deal. We got that. Then I drive back up here on Thursday. I check my email, my CMU email. I get an email from a pathophysiology professor in the health professions building.
Typically.
And said, hey, Nick, I have your wallet in the health professions building. You can come pick it up in my office. I'm like... How did it get there? How did it get to the health professions building from Pierce?
From stamps.
Yeah, stamps.
That's the important part.
Dude, and, you know, I got it back. Everything was good, but...
So, I mean, now are you in the process of getting another license?
No.
Do you still have...
I already paid the $9 for it, so I'm just going to...
You're just going to get a license?
Get a new license, man.
All right, I mean, yeah. You look cute. So
debit card's on the way, yeah.
So all that just to get the wallet back.
Yeah, and I was well prepared to lose it all, you know, take the $15 worth of stamps and chalk it up as a learning experience.
I was going to say, did you fight it and be like, I don't want to pay for that $15 of stamps? Or did you feel so bad for this person that they felt like they had to steal a wallet to buy stamps? So you're like, I'll just cover the damn stamps.
I can't believe they took it back.
Yeah, I don't even know if I think kind of offended that they thought, oh, this is a college student's wallet. I can only afford to buy stamps.
$15 worth of stamps.
Yeah. And what were they spending the $15 worth of stamps to mail? Find out on the next episode of A1 and A10.
Hey, if you're out there and you stole Nick's wallet, we're not going to arrest you. I mean, we don't have the ability to unless we want to try a civilian arrest, but I'm not up for
it. I just want to know what you spent $15 on to mail.
Let us know your story.
Please.
Come to the A10.
please, we'll even do it anonymously. You can wear a paper bag on your head, just like a little mouth hole for the microphone.
I genuinely don't have an issue. It wasn't my video. $15. I really
don't care.
Well,
I mean, anonymous
care.
To us. Anonymous to us.
I just
want to
know.
Yeah.
What was that important to mail at 2 a.m.?
I just hope I got it mailed.
It was 2 a.m.
Where are you buying stamps at 2 a.m.?
And $15, that's a heavy package.
Can you get them at, like, Meijer or something?
Maybe.
It was on stamps.com.
Oh.
What?
This guy's fancy.
Yeah. He was going the printed
or
version.
Or girl, we don't assume.
Or girl, of course, of course.
Oh, we don't assume, of course. Yeah.
Or genderless, I didn't.
Anything's possible.
Hey.
That is one of the best stories that I have heard in a long time, and I am glad that you saved it for this.
Absolutely, and I don't think it can be topped.
No, and I think we have to end on that high
note. Absolutely.
So for episode 4, that's going to do it. A1 and the A10, we'll have our closing thoughts, and that will do it for this one before next Monday. So we're going to start with Matt Feinauer. Closing thoughts for the night, because Feinauer, it seems like it's your night.
I'd like to reiterate, I retracted all prior statements about North Dakota.
Perfect. There's nothing more respectable than a man who can admit when he's wrong. North Dakota, you have Feinauer's respect.
Wrong.
That's fair. All right. Well, Matt, you're pointing to Nick Peel. So, Nick Peel, I know some pretty exciting things happened in your world this weekend. Mm-hmm. You want to have your closing thoughts about that? Or?
We're decompressing a little bit.
Yeah.
Bit.
I wore the shirt for you, too.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Woo. Did you know that polar bears actually have black skin and their white fur is actually transparent?
I did.
Hmm.
I did. That's a very interesting fact, and thank you for sharing, Nick. I'm going to go with my final thoughts. Just want to say, you know, today, me, Feinauer, Sean, and Gore went and played some tennis.
Yep.
Was able to get back out, be active,
yep.
productive.
To the victor goes the spoils.
Absolutely a thorough ass-kicking.
Yep.
Matt and I took it to him once
yep.
again,
yep.
only to come home and beat Gore and Madden for the first time ever. So I'm riding a high tonight, folks. We're just going to leave it at that.
All right. So Matt gets his victor spoils in. Gore, how do you retort?
There's a timeout. Where? On the field. Oh.
Well, as a great man once said, you can't have your soup and eat it too. My closing thoughts for the night, and I actually am kind of surprised that Nick Peel did not say it. I'd like to send a very special congratulations to the Great Lakes Loons organization. As I said, I was wearing their T-shirt. First Midwest League championship ever. Plenty of friends who both broadcast with audio or did the video for the Loons, and they're a fantastic organization, the organization that got me into minor league baseball. Very happy to see that things worked out for them so well this season after it kind of seemed like it was not going to go that way about the middle part of the season. So to everyone in Midland, to everyone in Looney Town, congratulations. Soak it up. And that will do it for this episode of A1 and the A10. We will see you next week. Have a good one, everybody.